Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity of National Review, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. All of it brought to you by Dollar Shave Club. Right now, for just $5, you can get the Dollar Shave Club Daily Essentials Starter Set. And that means you can start the day properly groomed. DollarShaveClub.com/martini. Much more on that a little bit later in the podcast. Jim, let's start with our good martini. And we turn our attention to yesterday's primaries and the runoff in Texas. They had their original primary back in March, but not a lot of huge surprises in Texas, except for the turnout was abysmal for Democrats. So hopefully that means good things for Republicans come November. Over in Georgia, where most of the other eyes were, we were going to have a runoff for the Republican gubernatorial nominee between Casey Cagle and Brian Kemp. But there again, Republicans definitely getting the edge in voter turnout in the primary, Jim, in this cycle where the Democrats are supposed to have all the energy. And at the same time, the candidate who did win the Democratic primary for governor, Stacey Abrams, a lot of mainstream media trumpeting the fact that she is the first female African-American nominee in the history of Georgia for the office of governor. What you have pointed out here in the Morning Jolt today, however, is that you might not want her running the budget in Georgia when she is personally over $200,000 in debt and owes about $54,000 to the IRS. Of course, in typical politician fashion, she says that this means that regular Georgians can identify with her. So, Jim, what's your big takeaway from Tuesday?
Greg, does the average Georgian owe more than 50 grand to the IRS? Because if so, boy, that will take care of the deficit real fast. I'm sure this is not the first time we've had a candidate who's had a considerable amount of personal debt. I'm sure more than a few Georgia Democrats will want to bring up Trump's multiple business bankruptcies and circumstances like that. When they say, you know, this, the average Georgian relates to this, I don't know about you, Greg, but every time we add up the numbers on TurboTax and we send in our return, there's that faint anxiety, that nagging fear of, what if I forgot to put something in there? What if the numbers don't add up? What if I forgot to carry the two? Like, you gather all your receipts, you kind of have this, I think everything on this is right. I'm like 98% sure this is right. But look, the tax code is ludicrously complicated and it changes every year. And, this nagging fear. I don't quite get how you just suddenly wake up one day and you have 50 grand that you owe the IRS. I don't see how you get there unless one year you just didn't file your taxes. Or the IRS, you did the numbers and the IRS says you owe this much and you just chose not to pay. And then you start accumulating the penalties. And look, a lot of people have been in that circumstance, but I don't think that's something you can brag about. And I don't think that's something that is all that easy to explain or hand wave away. The other thing is, if you're a Democrat and she's going to want to raise taxes somehow, you want to increase government spending, as she says, you want to do more for the poor, well, then you got to pay your taxes, ma'am. I don't really get to see how you could say, we need to spend more and people need to pay their fair share when you yourself have demonstrated you're not willing to pay your fair share. And then for all the other personal debts, look, she's taking care of various relatives, she says, and I'm sure all of that spending seemed like a good idea at the time. But this just strikes me as very easy fodder for whoever the Republican nominee turns out to be. I'm congratulations for her for breaking a barrier, being the first African-American woman nominee. But look, I don't know how you can just kind of hand wave away running up, six figures in debts. And particularly when a big chunk of them is to the Internal Revenue Service. So I don't think this is the grand victory for Georgia Democrats that they think it is. I remember the "I'm not a witch, I'm like you" claim from Christine O'Donnell. I don't know if "I'm not a tax cheat, I'm just like you" is going to work as well for Abrams in this race.
Stacey Abrams is very lucky Dave Ramsey does not live in Georgia. That's all I can say. He would not be pleased. All right, let's move on to the bad martini now. And Jim, you have to give the Democrats almost a little bit of credit here, because for a long time, every argument for gun control started with, "We're not trying to take away your guns." And slowly but surely, they're getting to the point where they're saying, "Yeah, we want to take away your guns." And the latest example of this is California Congressman Eric Swalwell. Now, he comes across as a fairly calm person. The more he talks, you realize he's not all that reasonable. He did replace Pete Stark in Congress, though, so personality-wise, it's an upgrade, but maybe that helps to make the radical ideas sound a little more palatable. He was on Tucker Carlson, I believe this was two nights ago, and Tucker Carlson simply read a bit of an opinion piece that Swalwell wrote about guns for USA Today and then called him out on it, and this is what happened.
You wrote it in USA Today, and you say this: we should ban possession of military-style semi-automatic assault weapons, we should buy back such weapons from all who choose to abide by the law, and we should criminally prosecute any who choose to defy it by keeping their weapons. So we should confiscate this entire class of firearms. What do you think would happen if the federal government tried to do that?
Well, Tucker, did you read the op-ed?
I did. I just quoted from it extensively.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not calling for a confiscation. What I'm saying is we should invest in a buyback, that we should restrict any weapons that aren't bought back to gun clubs, hunting clubs, shooting ranges, keep them there where it's safe and not on our streets. And if you were caught, just like if you were caught, you know, with drugs or anything else, if they had probable cause to go into your home and you had one of these weapons, yeah, you'd be prosecuted.
He says we're not calling for sending troops door to door to get all the guns. But Jim, clearly nothing to worry about here. It's just probable cause. We can make you a felon for maintaining possession of a gun that you legally purchased.
It's not a ban. It's just putting you in jail if you have one and we catch you with one. He refers to a Connecticut program, which was entirely voluntary. Look, there's a very big difference between voluntary buyback programs, which, by the way, usually you get whenever they do we're doing a buyback program for a firearm in a crime-ridden city or something like that. They usually get the oldest guns that anybody has ever seen. It's basically one step removed from Antiques Roadshow. You're not going to get the guns out of the hands of drug dealers, gang members, and the people who really are a menace to their community. No, you generally get somebody's got an old part of a gun or an old gun that they, you know, their grandfather has in the attic. They don't really need it. Hey, the government's buying it back. I can turn that into cash. That's what they get when they do these gun buyback programs. The other thing is, again, he keeps, you know, saying, oh, we want to use this with assault weapons bans. Now, we just saw the shooting down in Texas, which was done with a revolver and a shotgun. So once again, this focus on the assault weapons, the idea of, you know, and obviously the ever permeating definition of what an assault weapon is, deeply frustrating. And just kind of this is almost like this Orwellian doublethink at work, in which they say, look, we're not confiscating guns. We're just going to put you in jail if you have one. do these guys listen to themselves? It's pretty infuriating. It's kind of, it can leave you bleary-eyed and you know, frustrated and unkempt and unshaven, Greg.
But fortunately, we can help you out in that department, because Dollar Shave Club can not only get your facial hair taken care of, it can leave you feeling fresh and smelling great as you leave the house each day. We have been members of Dollar Shave Club for quite a while now. We started with the razor and the shave butter, and now we just love it across the board. So if you ever shower or brush your teeth or try to make your hair look presentable, which hopefully is most of us, we've got good news for you. Dollar Shave Club has a lot of stuff to help you out. Dollar Shave Club has everything you need to get ready every morning, and they're much more than just razors.
Dollar Shave Club delivers everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. You name it, from shampoo to conditioner to body wash, toothpaste, hair gel, and even a wipe that will leave your tush feeling tingly clean. I'm a big fan of their Amber and Lavender Calming Body Cleanser. I've never smelled anything like it, and good luck finding a product that great at your local store. All of Dollar Shave Club's products are made with top shelf ingredients that will not break your budget, and you will feel the difference. And don't forget, shipping is free with your membership.
And here is a great way now to try a bunch of Dollar Shave Club's great products for just $5. I mean, seriously, $5. You can get their Daily Essentials Starter Set. It comes with Body Cleanser, One Wipe Charlie's, those are the amazing butt wipes, their world-famous shave butter, and their best razor, the 6-Blade Executive. Keep the blades coming for a few more bucks per month, and then add in shampoo, toothpaste, and anything else you need. Check it all out at dollarshaveclub.com/martini. That's dollarshaveclub.com/martini. All right, Jim, a couple years ago, you and your good friend Cam Edwards wrote a book called Heavy Lifting. It's imploring young people to grow up, essentially, get a job, get married, and take on the responsibilities of adulthood. I don't know everyone who bought the book, but I can tell you who didn't. His name is Michael Rotundo. He is was in court the other day against his parents. His parents are trying to kick this 30-year-old guy out of their house. He is fighting them. And here's ABC News with the story.
And 30-year-old Michael Rotondo is speaking out hours after a New York judge ordered him to move out of his parents' home where he's lived rent-free for the past 8 years.
You're going to make it so that these people can just throw me out instead of, you know, letting me stay. It was, I'm not bothering living here.
These are the people now suing Rotondo, his very own parents, trying to evict him from their home. On Tuesday, Rotondo, acting as his own attorney, appearing in New York Supreme Court, claiming that his parents, seen here listening in court, should have given him 6 months to find alternate housing, a point the judge called outrageous.
I'm not a burden to them in the home. They don't provide laundry or food. It's really a moot point for them to seek me to be ejected.
In court documents, Mark and Christina Rotondo say they tried for months to get their unemployed son to move out, sending him these 5 letters asking him to leave and giving him $1,100 so he could find a place to stay.
And one of the things that they mention in that letter, in several of those letters, is we want you to go and get a job.
Right.
Have you done that?
No, I have. I got a business that I get income from, and I'm expecting that I will be able to, overwhelmingly, I can't imagine I'm going to be here past 3 months.
So, Jim, in the written write-up of this, he won't elaborate on what the business is. He just says, my business is my business. And the other part that I want to mention is it says here, by the end of October, Michael Rotondo said his parents were demanding he get a full-time job, health insurance, and sessions with a therapist. But he said he, quote, didn't need any of those things. So what do you make of this?
First of all, Greg, I want to point out you said you couldn't list everyone who bought heavy lifting. This podcast would not be that much longer if we decided to list everyone individually who bought a copy of Heavy Lifting. So thanks to all of those people and to everyone else. Thanks for nothing. No, it's fine. I think as I'm listening to that extraordinarily awkward interview, what's really remarkable about this guy is that he chose to fight it in court to publicly insist that, no, he needs another 6 months. He's not a burden on his parents. He's doing his end of the bargain by not asking them to do laundry or provide food. This is usually the sort of thing that gets handled in a discussion or two. The idea that like 5 letters, I'm only trying to imagine the feeling if your parents had ever written you a letter saying we need you to move out. And this is not a you know, utterly alien phenomenon. I know friends who've had their younger siblings, you know, the awkward conversations of, wow, I can't believe I'm 30 and I still live with my parents. Well, believe it because it's happening. And 2, do something about it, right? Look, we understand everyone has setbacks in life. Everyone goes through hard times. You can't find a right job. Housing prices are high. You know what? Maybe you got to take a roommate. Maybe you got to take a housemate. Maybe you got to, you know, compromise the standard of living you've grown accustomed to, living in your parents' basement or in your old bedroom, because you don't want to be this guy going into court and insisting that your parents are doing something unfair to you by asking you to leave the home at age 30. The other thing that gets me is he's doing the interviews. There's a concept of shame. There's a concept of, I have disappointed my parents. I have not lived up to their expectations. I have become a burden upon them long after I'm supposed to be independent and standing on my own 2 feet. And it's just, I mean, we can kind of laugh about this. And I think this guy's, you know, viewpoint of the whole perspective is so light years away from what once was, you know, near universal in the culture, and I think still is a pretty, like the fact that this is news is because everybody finds it kind of inherently absurd and ridiculous that this guy legally fought with his parents to keep living with them rent free. On the one hand, it's kind of disappointing, you left shaking your head. On the other hand, the fact that everybody's reacting and kind of laughing at this guy, it might be painful for him, but he kind of needs it. He needs that sense of shaming to get him onto a better path, because clearly everything else has failed to generate the sense of him realizing, you know what, my parents love me. They've done the best for me. They did everything they could to get me into life. It's time for me to stand on my own 2 feet and be independent and stop living in their basement or wherever he's living inside their house.
Jim, I'm not sure he's shamed, though. He seems to think he's the victim here, which is very, very bizarre. And it goes to what you and Cam talked about, I think, in terms of delayed adulthood. And we saw that a little bit with the Obamacare allowing kids to stay on the parents' policies till 26 and so forth, creeping further and further away from the 18 or 22 or roughly around there when most people usually seem to think the transition to adulthood occurs. So do you think we're going to see more of this?
I'd like to think that enough people who are living with their parents watched that segment and shifted awkwardly and uncomfortably in their seats and started looking through the classifieds or getting onto Craigslist or something like that. This guy, like I said, they seem like there's something wrong with him. I don't know. We've been interested to see what kind of reaction this story gets. I have not seen people insisting, oh, those parents are so cruel. How dare they expect him to move out of the house at age 30?
Jim, amazing stuff. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And don't forget to visit our friends over at Dollar Shave Club, dollarshaveclub.com/martini. For just $5, you can get that Daily Essentials starter set. Tune in again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.